Live from Philadelphia's FIFA Fan Festival at Lemon Hill in the beautiful Fairmount Park. Welcome to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, folks, it's official. FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. We are right here in Lemon Hill in the middle of Fan Fest just before it opens to the public. Fans are expected to come in droves throughout the month-long tournament. And this afternoon, Cherry, is the big kickoff.
Oh, yeah.
Mexico versus South Africa in Mexico City, happening around 3 p.m. Team USA plays tomorrow night, and the first game in Philly happens on Sunday.
Wow, it is finally here. We've been talking about this, and now we're on Lemon Hill. We're inside of the swag store. Get all the swag, some really cool jerseys. So you can be ready. We even have our own swag.
Yes, we have
WHYY soccer swag on
scarves.
Today.
Pretty cool. And it is crazy to be up here. There's like a whole city that's been built on Lemon Hill.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about just
all
sort of how we got here.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's been a long road to get to this moment. It started 6 years ago when FIFA began evaluating cities around the globe as potential World Cup hosts. Infrastructure, the hospitality industry, transit, even fan experience were all taken into consideration. And after one global pandemic, millions of dollars, and a lot of confidence in Philly, today we join 15 other cities in the United States, Canada, and Mexico as a 2026 host city.
So pretty today on the show, we have a jam-packed program with food, fun, and history. But first, we want to dive into the present.
Oh, yeah.
One of the people at the center of everything happening right now is Meg Kane. She is the host city executive and CEO of Philadelphia Soccer 2026. She's with us right now to talk about all the excitement and what's to come. Meg, we know you are so busy. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me. This is extraordinary. We are in the FIFA store, 18,000 square feet of all the merch.
That's
that
the official
you can
name,
want.
Not That's the swag store. That, we
it's
call
not
it,
the,
we call
it
swag
the swag store. That's, okay. It works. It works. But we are surrounded by amazing kits of all the different nations that are playing. And this is just, it's very surreal for me.
Yeah.
And I think for many of us, this has been a long time vision. Michael Delbain, who is the genius behind the design of all of this, our executive producer of FanFest, just walked by and we both, you know, hugged each other and said, like, oh my gosh, like it's go time. We're ready.
And so, you know, you've said that your vision was to create a soccer Coachella.
Yes.
I love that phrase. And so our listeners can't see this right now. I want you to sort of lay it all out for us. Tell us what's involved in FanFest. Give us the purpose, the setup. So sell it.
So when we first envisioned FanFest, and you know, a enormous credit goes to our board of directors, our chairs, Dan Hilferty, Michelle Singer, City of Philadelphia, Mayor Parker, and Governor Shapiro and the Commonwealth. When we envisioned this, we recognized that, you know, we wanted to create a World Cup experience for everyone. And when we host big events sometimes, we focus very much on the visitor and that fan experience, and we don't necessarily think about the resident. We don't think about the people who live in the city. And we wanted to create something that was really unique and really special and really authentic.
So what is this? So if people hear Fan Fest, they don't know what exactly that means. Yeah. What is here?
So a fan festival started back in 2006. It was a very organic thing that happened in Germany, where town squares just put out large screens during the World Cup in Germany, and people just came in droves to watch these matches. Mm-hmm. And so from there, it has really grown into this large-scale festival. So right now, your viewers and listeners may be hearing a little bit of music behind us. We are hearing a sound check of Luis Fonsi of Despacito fame.
There is a stage.
So there's concerts
massive
happening.
Massive stage, concerts, massive screens. We have four major screens all around.
And people got to eat.
People have to eat. So we're using food truck vendors from Philadelphia. We'll be rotating them out every week so that we have new and fresh experiences that align with some of the matches that we're having, but also that Philadelphia flavor. We have activations by FIFA's commercial partners. Bank of America is doing a really cool program where you can go up and create your own bracelet using charms that are Philadelphia and World Cup. Home Depot has Beckham's Backyard. It's a great space kind of just to get a full soccer experience. We've partnered with the Philadelphia Union on a soccer activation.
Wow.
We have the playground that is here at Lemon Hill. is open to those who are here for the festival. We have a family area with a misting station. And so we really thought about this in how could you have as many amazing experiences, but varied experiences over 39 days.
And it's free. So people can come here for free. You probably have to pay for the food trucks and stuff
like that. Yes.
But you can just come set up a picnic.
That's
area
right. Bring a blanket.
Have a fun time.
Absolutely. You can set up a blanket in front of one of the screens, lay out for the day. There's great shade. There's a lot of sun. So definitely recommend sunblock.
Yeah. And how were you guys able to keep it free? Because some cities are charging.
Sure. So again, going back to the very beginning, we felt it was so important understanding that ticketing for the actual World Cup, the match tickets were going to be cost prohibitive and something that host cities don't have any role in setting the prices for,
right?
It is completely a process that's controlled by FIFA. So for us, it as an organization, really felt it was so important to make sure that we kept this free. And so that began back in the bid. We worked with the business and philanthropic communities in Philadelphia and helped to basically raise private funding before we ever discussed any type of public funding to say to FIFA, we have the capacity and the desire to do this. And so it was businesses and business leaders who stepped up, and the Independence Blue Cross and Comcast, it's Cencora, formerly AmerisourceBergen, the Philadelphia Eagles.
And I read it was a total of about $60 to $65 million from private funders.
That's correct, yes.
And then the public funding is about $77 to $80
million-ish. That's probably about right.
And that's basically subsidizing the cost of things like this.
Absolutely. Yeah. It covers everything from stadium to here at Fan Festival.
Yeah.
It's part of working with SEPTA to keep our fares at $2.90 on the way to the stadium.
Which is not the case in some other cities.
That is correct. And free on the way home all
that's
six
fantastic.
Matches, thanks to our friends at Airbnb.
Can we go back to the bid process?
Yes.
Do you remember the first time you guys were in a room with folks at FIFA, or like what the initial contact was? Is there a moment you can take us to?
Absolutely. So actually it takes a little, it's a little bit of a story.
Got
a minute.
Yeah.
So we were originally supposed to be in Dallas on December 16th of 2020 to make our first presentation to FIFA.
Yeah.
And of course the world shut down on March 14th. So when you ask what's the first chance that we had to talk about Philadelphia, it was July 3rd of 2020. It was all on Zoom.
Wow.
And it was 45 people in different rooms at FIFA in Switzerland, in Zurich.
Oh, gosh.
And then we were allowed to have 8 people from the city of from representing Philadelphia, and we had 10 minutes to make our case.
Okay, so what'd you pack in those 10 minutes?
So in those 10 minutes, we talked about this 5 things that we have lived by in this bid and through all of our planning.
So,
1. Philadelphia is an amazing city that has great experience in hosting international and national events. Since the Republican National Convention in 2000, we have built our reputation on being able to host these amazing events. Papal visit, DNC, NFL draft, right? So we were building
experience
to
that's
this
number
moment.
One.
Experience. Yeah, we're ready for it.
2.
Yeah.
Lincoln Financial Field, known as Philadelphia Stadium,
for the time being,
was an absolute jewel of a stadium, and it met so many of the requirements that FIFA was already looking for. And kudos to John Smolinski, Frank Yemeni, and the Eagles. They had gone ahead in the 2019 renovation and had put in so much of the infrastructure that FIFA was going to require in the bid.
Knowing that we
had signed a letter of intent. So they really, really stepped up for us
so
in such a major
two.
Way.
Yeah.
3.
We are an amazing hospitality city.
Okay.
I mean, arts and culture, food and beverage, history, whatever you're coming for, like we have it all, and we needed people to understand that.
We're right with you on that.
Right.
What's
okay. 4, compactness.
Yes.
So we are a walkable city, but more importantly, SEPTA was a secret weapon.
Okay.
And as Philadelphians, sometimes we take SEPTA for granted, but when you can get to the stadium from Center City in 12 to 15 minutes on the Broad Street line,
that's
something that a lot of cities cannot
especially
offer.
When you're comparing to other North American cities,
absolutely.
Which is the comparison point here.
Yes, and for us, Northeast cities.
Yes.
Right? So if you think of Boston Stadium, that's in Foxborough, which is
further away.
Yeah. MetLife or New York, New Jersey is in East Rutherford, not
and
in
ours
New York.
Is, yeah.
And ours is in Philadelphia proper.
Okay.
And last but not least.
The cherry on the top. Go ahead.
The cherry on the top.
Yes.
The best sports city in the United States. You have to
fans.
Put the FIFA World Cup here. Fans. But there's no other fan base that is going to fall in love with FIFA. If you're looking to reach a new audience, there is a fan base here that loves a rooting interest. They love to party and they love to celebrate sports, and that's who we are.
And so of all the places, and Avi and I were talking about this before the show, like, of all the places you could put the center place for the fan festival, why here?
So it's a really another, I think, story out of our bid process was, if you go back to the original bidding documents, which live online from 2017, when we were all part of the, what was called the United Bid to bring it to Canada, Mexico, and the United States, our place for FanFest, that was our plan, had been the park at Penn's Landing, the CAP.
Yeah.
And of course, the pandemic delayed the construction of the CAP by 3 years.
Yeah.
So we went from saying we're going to host the first major event at the park at Penn's Landing, it would be FIFA Fan Festival, to all of a sudden having to say, wow, in a summer when we have so much compression of the July 4th holiday, MLB,
so much
All-Star,
going on.
Art Philly, what now, all the things that are happening, Welcome America, the traditional pieces that we didn't want to displace in any way for, if you will, a one-time event, we had to get creative. And a special kudos to Giselle Jones and Bob Allen at the Office of Special Events, who really got creative, brought all of us to the table and said, let's look at Lemon Hill. It's never been used for something like this, mm-hmm. but we have the space. It's a hidden gem. And it really
sold you on Lemon Hill.
They sold us on Lemon Hill, and I will tell you that when I first got here, the first time I got out of my car, I mean, cars were whizzing by. There was like a ditch. There's no sidewalks. There's lots of trees happening, and I'm like. And I had to walk up a hill, and I'm in a pair of heels.
You had to be convinced.
Correct. And I'm in a pair of heels, which was bad planning on my part. Let's just be honest, bad planning. But we walked up, and, you know, Michael Delbane was there. And, you know, we just sort of started to envision it. And that, you know, and it kind of captured the imagination. Like, what about doing something that was totally different, that wasn't the Parkway?
Yeah.
Right? That wasn't the art museum. Love the art museum.
But it is a bit of a gamble, right? You got to get people to come here.
Absolutely.
And I am curious if you think your expectations are going to meet reality now that we're seeing it happen.
Sure.
We have seen some reporting from the Inquirer recently that maybe the hotel bookings aren't mm-hmm. quite what the hotels expected. In terms of, look, we don't know what's going to happen.
Sure.
We're going to find out over the next 39 days. But what you're seeing right now today, do you think you're going to get as many fans here as you expected to get here?
Yes. Right now, I would tell you that we are well over 200,000 in pre-registrations.
Okay.
For the
39
days.
What was the expectation?
We actually had no expectation. We weren't sure if people would pre-register because there's no cost to this,
right?
So we're asking people to do something and to say they're coming. And certainly there's attrition to that. So we didn't really put a number on it. We needed to have that system in place for safety and security purposes, being able to communicate to people, there's a thunderstorm coming, that type of thing.
Right.
So for us, I think we feel really heartened by that interest and by that number. I think we know that this space is 0.4 miles walking distance from the most popular international attraction that we have, which is the Rocky statue at the top of the steps.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It's very adjacent, so you can kind of flow through. And this is here for 39 days. And so I wonder, we only have a couple more minutes, but like, what do you think this will leave? What do you think will be the legacy of this fan fest? What are you hoping that having the FIFA World Cup here in Philadelphia leaves for the city? What mark do you hope it
leaves? There's two things, and I'll speak specifically to Lemon Hill first. After this festival is done, part of our commitment to the neighbors for allowing us to do this, and I know that it's hard when these big events come into neighborhoods, but Philadelphia Soccer 2026 has committed $4 million to Lemon Hill to go with what the city's investment is going to be on long-term infrastructure upgrades. So an inclusive playground, and right now we have taken, over the course of the last 2 years, probably 18 community meetings about what the neighbors would like to see here, that the city is evaluating all that. Ultimately, it's Parks and Recreation's decision. We anticipate that some lighting will be added and that there will be other long-term benefits to
so
this.
So that's for Lemon Hill.
That's for Lemon Hill. Mm-hmm. But writ large, for me, I hope that our hosting a FIFA World Cup answers the question of, is Philadelphia ready for anything? Mm. We are ready. We're a great city. And we, this is our moment for the global, to be on the global stage. This is a 39-day advertisement for the city of Philadelphia to around the world. And that is such an opportunity. And so I hope that while the chip on our shoulder is so much a part of our city identity, I hope it softens maybe a little. and I hope it gives people. everybody the courage and the bravery to say we can do whatever the next thing is.
It's a dream big moment.
It's a dream big moment.
Real quick, before we get out of here, one thing a visitor has to do in Philadelphia when they're here.
Oh, that is the hardest question. I love, so I'm a native Philadelphian. I grew up here, so I love it. I'm going to say the Barnes Foundation.
There it is. The Barnes Foundation.
All right.
I like that.
Well, thank you.
That wasn't what I was expecting. Yeah. Meg Cain, host of the executive
and CEO
of Philadelphia
Soccer
2026.
Well, coming up after this quick break, we're dishing with Philly Mag food editor Kaylani Palmisano about the authentic cuisine to make or take out to order during the matches, plus fun and games with EP Kev. We will be right back. Welcome back to this special World Cup Fan Fest edition of Studio 2. We are live from Lemon Hill. I'm Cherry Gregg.
I'm Avi Wolfman. Aaron, that music that you just heard, by the way, is Philadelphia's World Cup Sonic ID, produced by the one and only DJ Jazzy Jeff. Every 2026 host city has their own sound, their own vibe. We are not biased. We just happen to like ours the best.
It was jamming.
We're also partial to our own food scene, Cherry.
Yeah, we already know Philly is a top-tier food town with countries from around the globe competing in six matches here. We wanted to get a taste of some authentic cuisine that you can make at home or, if you're like me, get it delivered. From snacks to entrees and even dessert, we're about to break down the best food for your watch party.
Kaylani Palmisano joins us now. She is a food writer and editor at Philadelphia Magazine and host of WHYY's Check Please Philly. Kaylani, it is so great to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yes, we love having you. And, you know, you have come with some great recommendations for us today. And Avi and I have a couple of our own as well. But we want to start with the Brazil-Haitian match on June 19th. So what is a good place to start if you want to serve some Haitian food?
Sure. If you want to serve some Haitian food, if you're hosting a party, I love any good meatball, you know, and you could stick the little toothpicks in the with the little flags on there. Yeah, make it really festive. But the Haitian meatball is called the boulet, and it is Creole ground beef that is spiced with scotch bonnet. And
so
honestly,
it's spicy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, a lot of Haitian food, you're going to see a lot of scotch bonnet. So if you can't take the heat, get off the field.
That's right. And so you got to call. You can't just walk around saying meatballs. You need to say, would you like a boulet?
Would you like a boulet? Yes.
What else we got in the Haitian table here?
Yeah, you can make some patties. They fill their patties with either ground meat or salted cod, smoked herring, and it's all wrapped in a flaky pastry. Again, like a nice little like hand food that you can pop in.
Yeah, and so they have something called okra as well. Did I say that right?
Okra, yeah. It's a spiced fritter that is made from not ground, but shaved up galang.
What is galang?
It's a type of root vegetable.
Okay.
It's a type of root vegetable. And again, great finger food.
Yeah, and where am I going to find the ingredients to make all this stuff? Where am I finding my galang and my scotch bonnet and all that?
Yeah, Seven Brothers is really good. I think they have a few locations, and so does Supremo.
Supremo.
Yes.
Okay.
So you know what, Kaylani? I don't know if I don't want to be sweating in the kitchen. I want to just make sure everything is like
Cherry
just
is
neat and so.
Being abundantly clear, she does not want to make her own food.
And so if I'm, you know, I don't want to mess it up. I just don't want to mess it up. So where is a great place to get takeout or to watch the game?
There's a place in North Philly called Goo.
I think I've heard of this one.
G-O-U. Right. And they are not only going to have their own watch party where you can watch the game, have some drinks, have some food, but they also offer takeout. So a lot of the dishes we, you know, just talked about, they have there.
Fantastic. All right, let's talk about France versus Iraq on the 22nd, that game taking place at what's now called Philadelphia Stadium, Cherry. Don't get it wrong.
Okay.
French food, charcuterie.
Yeah, oh, I love cheese.
You know that's a crowd pleaser. That's an easy place to start.
Help us out.
We want to make a nice board here.
A good rule for making a cheese board is having a hard cheese, a soft cheese, and a blue cheese.
A hard cheese, a soft cheese, and a blue cheese.
Okay. Yes. And
three colors in the French flag. Hard cheese, soft cheese, blue cheese.
It's a good place to start. I'm not saying that you can't have more cheese. It's just that, you know, this is your base. This is your foundation. If you want to keep it in kind of the French cheese world, you got your Comté, which is rich, nutty. It's got like it's slightly fruity and a really great hard cheese. There's also Brie. I mean, I think that's a great standby.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah.
It's buttery, earthy, mildly funky. And then, if you're sticking in the French realm, Roquefort for your blue cheese.
Which is a little controversial. I think some people think it's a little overpowering.
I mean, I love intense blue cheeses.
Okay.
So this is...
That's where you're coming
this
from.
This is my choice.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what else do you need on that board?
I mean...
Just the cheese and I like a little bit of fruit on my board.
Get a little variety. Right. I love fig spreads.
Okay.
Nuts, blueberries, strawberries, because they're in season. As a Jersey girl, love me some blueberries.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And by the way, I can make a charcuterie board, so I'm jumping in on that one.
You're not going to order the board?
I'm not going to order the board, no.
There's a place in West Philly, by the way, you can order a board.
So
and I've gotten
it
before, so you come to me.
Now I got to know. Where is this place?
It's called, it's like Baltimore Avenue and 50th. I'm going to mess up the name, but it's got third in the name.
Okay.
Third Wheel, I think, is the name of the
place.
Great.
Write that
great
down.
Great spot. Mm-hmm.
Great tip.
And so they have, we got to talk about France's chip and dip equivalent.
Oh, yes. The chip and quip equivalent would be your crostini with either tapenade, like an olive tapenade. Oh, yes. Or a pâté.
I love it.
Just smear it on like a crusty day-old baguette and voila.
And I want a dessert here as well. Kevin.
Oh, yeah. If you, like you said, Cherry, you don't want to be too hot in the kitchen. Well, great.
We're really establishing Cherry's do's and don'ts here.
Well, I agree. On a day like today, it's sweltering. For dessert, you could do a chocolate pots de cream. And there's a lot of big, recipes out there where you don't have to bake.
Yeah,
and who doesn't love chocolate?
And so, if you don't know where to go to get all the things that you need, where do you go?
I mean, okay, for the dessert, obviously, you can just go to your like Whole Foods, Sprouts, wherever.
Yeah.
But for the charcuterie board, highly recommend Soupette on East Passyunk.
Okay.
Or Third Wheel cheese.
That's
the obvious recommendation.
Yep.
Where can we watch the game if we want to cheer on Team France?
Oh, okay. Well, we have a phenomenal article in our recent issue of Philadelphia Magazine.
Go ahead.
Best summer ever. Got a plug. we have a whole guide to where to watch the World Cup. It's by Michael Bradley. He recommends Good King Tavern. Great choice. But if I could throw another one in there, it would be Caribou Cafe in Midtown.
Oh,
and by the way, Good King Tavern is also my personal pick.
Yeah.
Great French spot, great vibes. And, you know, whether the World Cup's happening or not, just a great place for some comfortable neighborhood French food. So that's
my
Avi's pick as well.
Yeah.
So a game that I will definitely be watching is the Ghana-Croatia matchup that is happening on June 27th.
You're definitely watching?
I'm going to watch something. That's the one I'm going to watch. Yes.
Okay. You tell me why later.
I'll tell you why. Well, Ghana's on my bucket list. So I'm going
to
places to travel.
Yes.
So I'm gonna go Team Ghana for this one. And so I know you have some good West African staples for us. Tell us what we need to be putting together for.
I mean, what Ghana-oriented like party is a party without jollof rice?
Yeah. What is jollof rice?
It is rice that is cooked in a tomato sauce that's spiced with chilies, onions.
So delicious.
You could throw in some vegetables in there and. You know, it's a perfect side, especially if you're having a barbecue. Like if you're making grilled chicken, boom, jollof rice.
Jollof rice for the cookout. Yasa, tell us about that.
Yeah, if you don't want to make too much of a mess, I love me a one skillet meal. And this is like if you're having a more intimate soccer party.
So now you're talking my language.
Yeah.
I like to cook, but the mess is what gets me.
Yes.
So help me. This is a one pot dish.
Chicken that's marinated with onions, peppers, mustard. So it's like kind of tangy. And as well, like with lemon juice as well.
Okay.
So you marinate the chicken and then you just put all that into a skillet and let it roll. I mean, you take it out of the marinade, yes. You put the chicken in and then you add, like, you know, more sliced onions. Because, I don't know, chicken and onions don't cook at the same rate.
And now you, and you also recommend a snack food.
Oh, yes, Killy Willy.
Okay.
Spiced fried plantains. A lot of cultures
Spiced fried plantains.
Yeah. Well, how are they spiced, though? Because I make fried plantains a lot, but I'm like, spiced?
What, I mean, spice they, on? Like, any type of spice blend, probably throw some chilies in there, probably some scotch bonnet.
Okay, make it hot.
This
make
is like, hot. You know, you have a lot of options there.
All right. And then,
Where am I getting the ingredients? I got to know where to go to get all the good
stuff. Oh, my goodness.
Here.
Okay. Uncle Musa African Grocery Store in Upper Darby. Upper Darby, wildly diverse dining scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
In fact, I was looking up like the different restaurants associated with different countries that we're playing here. There's an Ecuadorian restaurant even in Upper Darby. They have such a panoply of options when it comes to international cuisine in Upper Darby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love it. And so I know that where can we watch the game?
Okay, it's recommended in our guide to watch parties, but you can't go wrong with Kilimanjaro.
Okay,
out in University City, great place to watch it. And then if you're doing takeout, Suya,
it's like Suya.
Yeah, okay. Super easy rice bowls, and Suya is just like grilled meat.
All right, I love it, and I think Kilimanjaro would be my spot as well.
Yes,
that's where you're gonna watch the game.
I don't know if I'm gonna watch the game out, but if but I would get takeout.
You're not
food.
You're not going to commit live on
I'm
air.
I'm not going to commit live because you would ask me about it, and I would be like, But I think I could put together a little meal.
You could host West a African really food. Great party with some of these.
All right. So before we let you go, Kehlani, we do have to ask if there's any other places you would recommend just catching a game, whether it's food adjacent, food adjacent.
Yeah.
Because I would like to, honestly, catch a game out with the people. Because I'm not like a huge soccer fan, but I love the atmosphere.
Yes.
Of watching a soccer match with others.
I think, so I'm rooting for Germany, other than the United States. I've got my team scarf here, St. Pauli from the red light district of Hamburg, even though no one from that team is on the German team.
We'll get the backstory of why you like that club day.
So Frankfurt Hall, love it. It's got that outdoor
it's
kind
like a
of...
German beer garden
Yeah, it's
type
the
thing.
German beer garden. They're going to be playing the game. And then any game, honestly, any game, any time of year, 700 Club in Northern Liberties. That place,
I love it.
Love soccer so much.
Yeah. 700 Club in Northern Liberties with that, Kehlani Palmisano.
Thank
food
you.
Food editor at Philadelphia Magazine and host of WHYY's Check, Please. Thank you so much for being here today on Studio 2. I am hungry and I am ready.
I'm ready too. And I don't even need to sweat in the kitchen. I love
it. Exactly.
Thank you so much.
Takeout options galore. If you're just joining us now, we are live from Philadelphia's FIFA Fan Festival at Lemon Hill in Fairmount Park to kick off the 2026 World Cup. It's actually here, Cherry.
This is
the very first day of Fan Fest. It's opening to the public this afternoon for the first match in Mexico City. It is free for everyone. It will be set up for the next 39 days. The duration of the World Cup.
Yeah, and I just want to warn you, it is hot, it's loud, it's a lot of fun, and we're going to keep the energy going with executive producer Kevin McCrory, who is seated right next to us now.
Alfie,
you got here
Jerry.
Quick. We did a quick switcheroo. Could not let this hour go by without a little World Cup fun and games.
Fun
and games.
And apparently what's on the line this game segment is a box of donuts.
Right.
Okay.
So it's going to be me versus you.
It's
you
all
two.
Right.
You two collectively
Kevin
versus
Cherry and I.
Okay.
And whoever wins buys the other party donuts. So if you win, Kevin, you get more donuts. We have to split the donuts if we win.
Share them with the whole crew.
Okay.
Oh,
we're going to
share with the whole crew. So the crew wins no matter what.
Yeah. All right. Okay. So you have the rules. We don't even know what's going on.
It's me against the two of you. If you get it right, you get a point.
Got it.
If you get it wrong, I get a point.
Okay.
First up is a round I'm calling World Cups. And yes, these are questions that pertain to actual cups that you drink out of from around the world.
Okay.
Question one. Greece failed to qualify for the World Cup tournament this year, but they can still brag about creating a practical joke cup invented by this ancient Greek mathematician that when you fill it too high, turns into a siphon that drains out the bottom. Who is that ancient Greek mathematician? Pythagoras is correct. Point for obvious.
I only know one mathematician, and I went with that mathematician.
Question number two. The last and only time England won the World Cup was 1966.
Okay.
That's 2 years after Agent 007 first gave his famous shaken, not stirred direction to use a cocktail shaker in which Bond movie.
No idea.
Do you know any Bond movies from that?
No, no.
Doctor No, Octopussy.
I know, no. No Bond movies.
The funniest answer is Octopussy, so I'm going to go with that.
Incorrect. All right, that's a point for me.
Okay. Question number three. What was it?
Goldfinger.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
Brazil, Argentina, and Uruguay have together won 10 of the 22 World Cup tournaments.
Okay.
This traditional drink that's popular in each of those countries is often consumed out of a gourd with a metal straw.
Traditional drink, a caipirinha or something like that?
A gourd?
Yeah, like a coconut thing. The only drink I can think of is a caipirinha, but I don't know if
that's... Yeah, caipirinha or...
Time's up.
Okay.
It's mate. I think you're going to do better in the next round.
Okay.
All right, the next round. Soccer, of course, is famous for thrilling, low-scoring games that often end in a draw. To honor that excitement, our next category is famous ties.
Oh, okay.
The 1969 Academy Award for Best Actress famously was shared by Katharine Hepburn for her role in The Lion in Winter, and this actress for her role as Fanny Bryce in the movie Funny Girl.
I would say, it sounds like a Barbara Streisand to me.
Barbara Streisand.
Barbara, yes.
Yeah,
correct.
Barbara.
All right, so we're up 2-2. The 2019 Scripps Spelling Bee ended in an unprecedented 8-way tie. One of the octo champs was a 13-year-old girl from Camden, New Jersey.
Oh, goodness.
The final word she spelled correctly was the noun aiguillette. It's a shoulder cord worn by designated military aides. How is it spelled?
Aiguillette?
Yes.
Do you take this one?
Oh,
can't.
My
no
God.
Way.
I'm
not embarrassing myself.
Aiguillette. I'm going to probably, I would not win and become the spelling champ.
Do you want me to? I feel
go
bad.
Ahead, go ahead.
I have no idea. E-G-O-U-L-E-T.
Incorrect. A-I-G-U-I-L-L-E-T-T-E.
I was going back and forth on the A.
All right, so I'm back in the lead here.
You're in the lead.
Last question in this little mini round.
We're going to be buying some donuts.
In the 2021 pandemic-delayed Tokyo Summer Olympics, we got a rare tie for a gold medal in an individual sport.
Uh-huh.
Okay, competitors from Italy and Qatar rose high above the rest, but hit the same barrier and then agreed to share the gold medal. What was the Olympic event?
It's got to be the high jump.
Yeah, king of trivia, go for it.
It's the high jump. It's
there we
the
go.
High jump.
All right. Is this tied?
We're tied up 3-3.
Okay.
Going
another
into the final
tie.
Trivia round here.
The aiguillette thing's going to haunt me, Cherry.
And this one is a little trivia segment. It's going to be a tough one. This one's going to be a tough one. And
that was the easy part?
It's
oh
called
my goodness.
Who Said It? I'll read a quote, and I'll give you a choice between a famous soccer player and a famous Philadelphian. Are you ready?
Okay.
Quote one. I work hard every day to try to help my team. I try to have fun, too, because football is still fun. And scoring goals... breaking records, that's what drives me. Okay, so was that 1950s-era Philadelphia Mayor Richardson Dilworth talking about his efforts to revamp Society Hill or Team France superstar Kylian Mbappe in 2019?
Is this just like a trick question?
I don't know, man.
I mean, it was all about soccer.
I know.
Mbappe.
Mbappe's correct. Okay, you guys are good at this. You thought you didn't know a lot, but I think you know more than you're letting on. Okay, quote two. I asked the people of this city to give Sherelle Parker a chance.
Yes.
What you see is what you get. Okay, was that Delran, New Jersey native and two-time Women's World Cup champion Lloyd talking about her love of the current mayor of Philadelphia?
It was not.
Or was that the current mayor of Philadelphia referring to herself in the third person on Studio 2 in December?
That was Sherelle.
I would say number
Parker.
Two.
All right, so you guys are back in the lead. You're correct. You're good at this. You're better than you thought you were going to be at this. Okay, quote three. Thanks to Rebuild, made possible by the Philadelphia Beverage Tax, we are finally able to deliver a much-needed investment in community soccer fields. Two choices here.
Okay.
Was that Team Portugal superstar Cristiano Ronaldo
talking
about his love for niche American municipal taxes?
No.
Or former Philadelphia Mayor Jim Kenney in 2019?
I would say that, yeah.
Okay.
Jim Kenney.
So I think you guys have won, but we got one more quote just to work on this. Okay. Final quote.
I feel so accomplished, by the way.
My change
goodness.
In party will allow me to be reelected. Was that Argentinian great Diego Maradona talking about the famous Hand of God play in 1986 World
Cup.
Seems
unlikely, Kevin.
Or U.S. Senator Arlen Specter on why he switched from Republican to Democrat in 2010.
A process of elimination.
Oh, okay. The donuts are ours,
so the donuts are yours. Okay. I buy the donuts. That's the trivia. But before I go, I do have a little challenge I hope we could collaborate on.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I want you guys to help me create the ultimate Philly non-athlete soccer squad. So we're picking non-athletes from across time, and we're trying to, like, meet what it means to be, like, the different positions on the soccer field.
Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. So Cherry's going to pick three forwards. These are the goal scorers. When the pressure's on, they rise to the moment, and they get all the glory. You know, Messi, Ronaldo, Pele. I'll choose the four midfielders. Think endurance, can play both ways, unselfish facilitators. Mm-hmm. And Avi gets to pick the three defenders plus the keeper. When things go sideways, these are the people we can count on. So, Cherry, who are you picking for this ultimate Philly roster? You got the forwards.
Okay, I'm a civil rights journalist. So my first draft pick would be Octavius V. Cato, Civil War hero turned voting rights activist. He has a statue near
Love
City
that pick.
Hall.
Love that pick.
Second pick, it's Pride Month. And before Stonewall, there was Barbara Gittins.
Ooh.
She played offense before there was even a field. She's a mother of gay civil rights. And last but not least, this is not a political thing, but I'm going to go with Mayor Sherelle Parker.
Wow.
Because
she's on the team.
People always counted her out, and she always rises up and win when the pressure gets tough. And I'm thinking about that trash strike last year.
Okay, right, so those are
right.
Our forwards.
Those are the forwards.
Well, all right,
I like our squad so far.
Okay. I get to pick the midfielders, like I said. Two-way player. You got to go Ben Franklin,
mm-hmm.
right? The man has done it all.
Yeah.
He does it all. Say less about that. We all know Ben Franklin.
I'm going.
We knew he was
going to
be on the squad.
I knew he was. That's why, I.
Yeah, you let him take the easy one. Yeah,
I'm going Patti LaBelle as my second midfielder.
Okay.
Long career. She can do it with a group. She can be solo. And she's a cookbook author now. Okay? So there's that. I'm hitting up Walt Whitman, Civil War nurse to great American poet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right? I sing of myself. From every atom belonging to me, as good belongs to you. That's an unselfish midfielder right there.
Sure, sure.
And for my last pick, I'm going to go Tom Bell, legendary music producer, architect of the Philadelphia sound,
like
always
that.
Behind the scenes, but getting the best out of the big artist.
All right,
so I've
got
to go fast here. Defense. Yeah. Defense needs a steady drum beat. Going with Questlove.
Okay.
Defense, lawyers are good defenders. I'm going with the original great Philadelphia lawyer, Andrew Hamilton. Look it up, kids. I don't have time to describe it. Our defense needs a solid structure and architect. I'm going with Lou Kahn, the great architect. And finally, goalies, keepers are all about saves. So I'm picking a great Philadelphia minister, the Reverend Leon Sullivan, anti-apartheid activist, black economic empowerment leader, Leon Sullivan. You are the keeper, and that is our very bizarro
Goalie.
Philadelphia
Goalie.
Soccer team. Kevin, that was an off-the-wall, unhinged activity, and we thank
and
you.
And I broke Avi's coattails the whole time, so thank you. I appreciate that.
And I get by the donuts.
The donuts are always coming up.
Thank
We're
going
to talk about the history of soccer in this region and in America. Don't go anywhere. This is Studio 2, live from FanFest in Lemon Hill. Welcome back to Studio 2, broadcasting live from FIFA FanFest at Lemon Hill. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. The World Cup in Philly is exciting for pretty much everybody. And some of us are new to the game, but a lot of folks have been big into pro soccer for a very long time.
The sport has been steadily growing in popularity in the U.S. over the past few decades with the success of the U.S. women's team, the growth of Major League Soccer, and more widespread access to international leagues, helping the beautiful game reach a wider American fan base.
Yeah, a new book takes a look back at how we arrived at U.S. soccer today and what it could look like in the future. And joining us now is Mark Franek. He is the author of American Soccer Nation, the remarkable 150-year history of Yanks on a roll from mob football to the modern game. He's also a teacher at YSC Academy, a private school for elite soccer student athletes. Mark, welcome to Studio 2.
Thank you, Avi, Cherry. It's great to be here and Studio 2. Thank you for showing some love to the soccer people.
Oh, of course.
Oh, we have to. We have to, Mark. I'm just curious about the subtitle of your book, Mob Football to the Modern Game. So take us back. We're talking about the roots of American soccer. What is mob football?
Oh, yes, mob football.
The mafia, right? It's mafia football.
Yeah,
right?
No, we would call it mob football. So imagine going to a high school or a college, if you will, back in the 1800s. You're there. There's no adult supervision. Most of your classes are taught in Greek or Latin. And what do you want to do as soon as class is out? What do you want to go out on the quad or in between, wherever you could play a game with a ball? Try to move it in any means necessary from one side of campus to the other. That would be defined as mob football. And the English were the first to put the rules down of the modern game in 1863. So when we talk about soccer or American soccer or any soccer around the world, it really didn't get started until 1863.
And but, so they were playing mob football at campuses here?
Sure. Yes, of course. Yep. And campus, it would be called proto-soccer because you can't really call it soccer until 1863. But, yes, they would pick up the ball. They would kick the ball. Sometimes they had a tree that they would hit it into or a wall. And sometimes they were using spikes on their shoes. And the headmasters of these schools and the professors and the masters, if you will, hated it, right?
Because
it would end up putting a lot of kids in the hospital who are at these schools. So we had to get some rules set down, which the English did in 1863 that kind of organized the game and said, hey, you can't pick up and run with the ball in your hands. This is not proto rugby. You have to kick the ball to each other and kick it over a line and into a goal. And hence, the world was started on its journey to the beautiful game.
Wow. And so tell us about the roots of it growing in the United States, because it seems like if you go outside of the Western Hemisphere, soccer is huge. But it didn't feel like until the last 20 years or so that you started feeling that surge here in the U.S.
Yeah, certainly. You know, soccer in the United States has been here, always been here for 150 years. It took certain decades where it went dormant, if you will, but it never died out. But if you go back into the late 1800s, many of the soccer communities that were spread out around the United States, of which they were many, were being supported by the textile industry or early industrialization type companies.
The company teams.
Teams and immigrants.
Bethlehem Steel had a team,
There we go. Bethlehem Steel, about an hour north of Philadelphia by horse and buggy or early model car, right? Yeah, it supported these teams that were being supported by local industries that became pretty big. You know, many of the car manufacturers from Detroit were sponsoring football teams, soccer teams, if you will. So it became at first known as sort of an immigrant game, but then it evolved to include a lot more Americans. And to be honest and to be clear, soccer has always cast a wider net social, economically, racially, ethnically than any of the other four North American sports. We had Jewish teams playing in the 1920s, black teams, white teams, integrated
all
teams.
All playing together.
Together.
Wow.
Together. Together, which makes it different in its history than the NFL story or the Major League Baseball story.
I think I read somewhere that one of the most successful clubs around here was even called the German Americans.
There you go,
UGA. They would even have it in the title.
Yep, for many years, not just in Philadelphia, but in all the cities across America, the teams would be represented by their old country names, either where they were from or a team from the old country, if you will, or maybe the American sponsor. And they celebrated their identity, which is complex, basically the company that was supporting them in the United States, or maybe where their immigrant group came from Europe. And they celebrated
Germany, Ukraine, etc.
Not really good for marketing purposes, if you will, but all Americans. It's not an immigrant sport anymore. It's always been for a wide variety of Americans. And the tent is bigger. It's big. And for our listeners or viewers who are watching this, listen, some of them might be in the soccer tent. Maybe some have a pinky or a little toe inside the soccer tent. Maybe they're not in the soccer tent at all. But I bet that all of our listeners know at least some people are playing, a grandson, a granddaughter, right? A neighbor, the guy at work who shows up on Monday morning sporting a jersey from his favorite club team. There's a lot of soccer people around.
And so there's this history of it being in immigrant communities and sort of spreading and becoming more Americanized. When did it become a professional sport in America?
Right. So soccer professionally has had three iterations on American soil. A short one in 1894 to 1895 that didn't
last.
That
was like boom, boom.
Oh, my gosh. It came and went. It was supported by the baseball people who were looking to use their baseball stadiums during the winter months. It didn't last. Okay. Then you have a 1921 to 1931 sprint.
A little longer.
Long one, a decade long, called the American Soccer League. It was fully professional and had 8 to 14 teams up and down the Northeast Coast, from basically Philly on up to New York City, Brooklyn, and then Rhode Island up to Boston, that were playing professionally. 10 to 15,000 people would come to watch, and they were rivaling the baseball people at the time.
So they had a little traction there.
They had a little traction, and unfortunately, it got knocked out. Viewers and listeners might remember 1929, the Great Depression.
Yeah,
Which really knocked the wind out of the soccer people, which were largely blue-collar workers.
Mm. And if you don't succeed, try again. And the third iteration.
The third iteration was what we call the NASL, the North American Soccer League. And this league, roughly 1968 to 1984, this was the Cosmos area. Some listeners may recall Pelé.
Yeah.
And a bunch of European and South American pros nearing the end of their career were getting bought up by the North American Soccer League. And they were putting on their show, but unfortunately, they were playing in these giant gridiron stadiums that had 70,000 seats, but maybe only 10 to 15,000 fans, so it was a bad look. Playing on gridiron football stadiums in the turf with a crown in the middle, it just wasn't a pleasant experience. But it lasted for over a decade.
And we had the Adams, right? We had a
team. The Philadelphia Adams won. That's true. The Philadelphia Adams, for some listeners. That's great. You've done some research
on
this.
I did a little reading.
He loves this. Yes.
And so then now we get to MLS.
Yeah, MLS.
The domestic league of today. And, of course, people know the Philadelphia Union. I believe they started play in 2010 in MLS. So this is the longest lasting one so far. This has gotten the most traction. Tell us where the MLS stands today. I know you're bullish on its future.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Let's just start briefly. It was established in 1996. So we're into the 30th year of the MLS. It's a stable league. There are 30 teams playing, which now rivals it by number to the other four North American leagues that have 30 or 32 each. So it's across three time zones. It's fully professional, of course. Players are making six. Some are making seven figures. You have Messi, who's in town. And you have every one of these 30 teams supporting a local youth academy.
Including, we were telling me off mic, you're a little biased because you're affiliated,
of course.
But the Union has what is maybe generally considered the best of the youth academies. Tell us what a youth academy is and how it works.
Sure. In order to get really good at soccer, like the soccer mad countries in the rest of the world, you have to be embedded and immersed in soccer almost daily from a young age. That's just the way it works in the rest of the world, right? All of these wonderful jerseys around here and the teams that are going to be playing this summer. So what the 30 clubs have done, each of them, the professional clubs, have created their own youth academy system that brings in kids as young as 8. Some start at 10, others start at 12, but basically bring them into the club and they train them every month of every year, basically with 2 months off over the summer, to become potentially professional. Mm. So you've got these 30 clubs with these youth academies. Like, the NFL doesn't do that. This is just our way to imitate what goes on in the rest of the world.
And what stood out to me during this conversation was that it's a pretty good hit rate as far as the number of young people coming through the program who actually end up going pro.
Absolutely. YSC Academy, which is this high school, 80 kids or so from 7th grade through 12th graders.
This is the Union's
Academy. By high school graduation, about 18% will turn pro before high school graduation.
Wow.
If you go to college graduation, around 22 years old, a full 30% of kids who have graduated from that high school turn professional. And where are they playing professionally? Mostly in the MLS, under what's called the homegrown umbrella, which is meaning you're homegrown, you're American, you've been developed in America, primarily by an MLS club, and now you're making six figures to play your sport that you love in front of a paying crowd every week.
Yeah, and so when you think about the future of soccer, I mean, this is big for, you know, Philadelphia to have, six games for the World Cup. We have so many cities in the U.S.
The trains are excited about
this.
It, too.
Everybody's excited. And so when you think about future, what do you see as far as the fan base of fans growing in America?
Yeah, so listen, you have the MLS and another rival league called USL, United Soccer League, that are now putting out fully professional teams. 25 of the 30 MLS teams now play in soccer-specific stadiums that are intimate, that are beautiful, that are fun, that are being supported by their local fan base. And the league now is solidified, and there's billions of dollars at stake. Soccer is only going to continue to grow, not in every town around the country, but in the major nodes putting on the professional venues. And without a doubt, however well the United States team does this summer, whether we hopefully get out of the first round and get into the second or third round, it's still going to grow. It would be great if we could get further into the World Cup. Yeah. But no matter what happens to the United States men's national team, soccer is here to stay in North America. People are excited about it. The tent is growing, and it's going to continue to expand. There's enough money, enough eyes, enough people that are excited about it all around the country.
The enthusiasm is contagious.
I love it.
I am curious, though, how is the sort of like growth of MLS being charted with or maybe against the growing interest in like Premier League soccer, European soccer? Because I've been to like bars at 9 a.m, Mark, where people are watching Tottenham. And
sure.
I am curious, is that taking away from the MLS's growth? Is it feeding the MLS's growth? How do you consider that competition?
Yeah,
because now you can sit here in Philadelphia and watch a game happening in Germany or Britain.
Great. Listen, let's say it's soccer mad people or even people who are interested. Of course you're going to be able to watch your favorite team with these big satellite. You can click around and watch your favorite teams from Europe every week. But you know what else you can do? On a Saturday night, you can get in your car, you can drive to Subaru Park and watch the Union or any of the other 29 pro teams. And you can watch them on your Apple TV package for like $70 a year. And then the next day, if your wife or your spouse will let you, you can watch your three Premier League teams that you follow.
So you're saying they're not mutually exclusive.
They're not mutually exclusive.
More soccer is good,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes, listen, there's no reason why people who love soccer in America can't follow their local professional team, be excited about them, and also enjoy their best Premier League team and their best Champions League team. We're all under the same tent, and there's as long as there's enough hours in the day, you can peel yourself away from your family, there's something to watch.
Real quick, Mark, you said there's three players that came out of the Philadelphia Union Academy that are on the U.S. team. Their names are?
Their names are Brendan Aaronson, Austin Trusty, and Mark McKenzie.
Okay.
And they've each actually endorsed my book and given me... I mean, I got
the book.
Here are three national team players that went to the high school where I teach that plug this
So
book.
If you're going to root for three players, make it those three
in
this World Cup. Mark Franek is a teacher at YSC Academy and the author of American Soccer Nation. Thank you so much, Mark, for your time today on Studio 2.
Yeah, and WHYY will be covering the World Cup as all the events unfold in our newsroom on TV and Studio 2. And tonight, tune in to WHYY-TV for Gritty But Global Phillies World Cup Adventure. So check that out.
Today's edition of Studio 2 was produced by Debbie Builder, Hazel May Bryant, and Paige Murray Bessler.
All right.
Our engineers are Tina Calique, Charlie Kyer, Al Banks, and Mike Schiffler. The technical crew includes camera operators Paul Parmalee, Theron Lewis, and Gary Lindstrom. And thank you to the crew at FIFA Fan Festival, including Melissa Ferdinand.
Yeah, the executive producer of Studio 2 is Kevin McCrory. Joan Isabella is WHYY's audio general manager. From Philadelphia's FIFA Fan Festival at Lemon Hill on World Cup Match Day 1, I'm Cherry Gregg.
Person behind me is Louis Fonzi, apparently. I'm Avi Wolf-Manerit. Thanks for joining us. Enjoy the World Cup, folks. It is here.